Welcome to Weekend Rental, episode 96. We are your gaming and geek culture podcast. My name is Ryan. As always, I'm joined by Andy.
Hey.
And Biff.
Tengu Elgato Los Penelones.
Hello?
Pants.
I don't know what I said. I think I have a cat in my pants. I'm not really sure.
Perfect segue. If you enjoy our content, you can find all sorts of other cat and pants related contents over at geekade.com. Whether it's gaming, TV, movies, comics, and more, it's all over there. Geekade, what's your geek? We're going to segue into a Byron Byrne, but first I must apologize. I listened to our last episode, and I realized that when I recite historical facts about documentaries, things I read, I just word vomit combinations of people's names out that are not at all accurate. And I'm sorry. Just understand what I was trying to get to. Don't listen to the words I was actually saying. Last episode was a little rough for me. I butchered every name I referenced, I think. So anybody else catch that? You guys probably like,
No clue. I didn't catch it.
Yeah.
Should we do a replay right here? Andy, cut it back.
Ah, that's too much work. But beyond my apology, we're going to get into one of our classic segments. We've not done this in a while. It is Buy, Rent, Burn. If you're not familiar with this segment, if you're new to the podcast, what we do is we pick games for a given system. We decide which ones we would personally buy, rent, or burn. So we got three games. You got to make your picks. Hard choices. And when we say burn, you mean not burn it to a CD. You light that thing on fire. We are looking at the Super Nintendo this go around. We're going to look at and compare Stunt Race FX, Rock and Roll Racing, and Top Gear 2. I guess we'll just go in that order. We didn't really have an order to go through them, but since I listed them there, we'll go through something fell over. Hope you guys heard that. We're going to talk about Stunt Race first. I'm going to read the description. The updated Super FX chip allows you to shift into high gear, get behind the wheel of a Formula Racer, a four-wheel drive monster truck, a subcompact, or a motorcycle. Each will provide a unique driving experience. Choose from over 20 pedal-to-the-metal tracks with an X, because it's an FX game. There are no holds-barred speed tracks. Stunt tracks provide an obstacle course, and a battle track means you have head-to-head conflict in surprising terrain. For speed, variety, action, and fun, Stunt Race FX finishes far ahead of the competition.
Is that competition with an X as well?
Exclamation point. Is that close
yep,
enough?
That works.
Is it sucks with an X?
Hey, none of that. This is a holy game. We will respect it and its legacy.
This is your favorite.
Yeah. So for anyone who's not familiar, I am a staunch fucking Stunt Race FX defender. It is fantastic. It's a great use of the mode 7 stuff. The Stunt Race cars look cool. The FX chip use is great. Way better than what everyone seems to think is the holy grail. And that would be Star Fox, which I would argue is a dumpster fire compared to the graphical powerhouse that is Stunt Race FX. No eye rolling, everybody. I can see you.
I'm not eye rolling.
I can see you, Biff and Andy.
The back of my eyes itch, and so I was just working on fixing this.
What's not to love? It's got a slow frame rate. I get it.
That's
it's got cute, lovable cars. They have eyes. It's got fantastic music. There's billboards of Mario. There's bonus segments. It's good.
I like how you instantly go for your
our
arguments against it. You're like, I already know it. I already know that. I already know that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter.
It has
matter.
Flaws. It doesn't make me love it any less, and it shouldn't make anyone else. You got to put the nostalgia goggles on. 1994, man. You hadn't seen a PlayStation. 64 didn't exist. Who had a 3DO? Nobody. You're lying if you said you did. Maybe if you were a PC kid, I could understand it. Andy might have an excuse. I think it's great. I played it. I started it up, kicked ass, remembered exactly what to do. I knew the technique, like laying off on the corners, where to go, where to get the power-ups. There's some problems, sure. Frame rate's one of them. Hit a wall at the wrong time, your whole race is effed. You might as well start over. That sucks. But get good.
For all the reasons that you love this game are all the reasons that I hate this game.
No, you can't hate it. No, I'm not going to allow that on this episode.
I respectfully hate this game. There, I said respectfully so it makes it okay.
You should go respectfully F yourself. So,
respectfully FX. So, all right, here's the deal with this game. Yes.
It's fantastic.
Better shut your mouth. I hope you choke on what you're drinking right now.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Yeah. You will listen. All right. So, yeah, the frame rate is an issue in this game. Here, when you have racing in the title, I feel like the speed of the game should be faster. It should feel faster and not so clunky. The graphics look cool. The colors are great. The sound is awesome. I actually like the sound effects of like the monster trucks when they're like landing and everything. It just for its time is really cool.
Yeah, 1994 this one came out.
1994, good year. Almost my favorite year. 95 is my favorite year.
Weird.
Yeah, I know. It is strange. Great music then. So anytime I picture a racing game, I feel like it needs to be just faster, faster pace, faster movement. I personally like games that are a little more realistic. So the googly eyes is, to me, I feel like I'm playing a kid's game.
But it's 3D. In 1994 on the Super NES, this could not have been any more realistic.
Right. It does kind of remind me of Uniracers, and that's one that we've done before.
No.
Listen to my whatever.
I can't.
You will shut your mouth. Anyways, I'm so aggressive today. Oh, I got to take my medication. So it's similar in Uniracers with the fact that, you know, those unicycles kind of had their own personalities. And that's something that we talked about before in a Buy Rent Burn quite some time ago. And so the vehicles have that personality, kind of looking around. And so I just kind of associated the two. And I love Uniracers, but I couldn't get behind Stunt FX that much.
Stunt Race FX.
It's so forgettable.
It's so forgettable.
I don't even know it.
I have 2 box copies over there.
I did like the mode of like the stunt actually instead of the racing, but just going on the course, like the stunt course. I appreciated that. I really liked that. I think they should have built the game more around that than the actual racing courses. But that's just my personal opinion, and Ryan will destroy it. But I'm more interested in what Andy has to say because he looks like he is on my side.
Yeah, I can say I'm not the greatest fan of this game either. I will give it to you. It's probably the best looking game out of all of these. Like, it definitely pulled off something, but I think they were a little bit too ambitious. Like, some of the courses, like, we're going underwater, doing all this other stuff.
I love that.
Which does look cool.
Kind of, it looks cool, but at the same time, if you don't know where you're on at the track, like, all the angles are all flat, and you're kind of like, what am I looking at? Where is the road right now? That type of thing. You get a little
never
bit
had
disordered.
That problem.
Really?
I feel like we're talking about Red Alarm on the Virtual Boy here. And that's
okay,
not
yeah. That's not what we were supposed to play.
No. I'm sorry. I'm interjecting a lot because I passionately defend this game.
Or you're just being
continue.
A tool right now. Put it back
well,
in the
that
box.
Could be too.
Put it back
it's
in
content.
The box.
Ugh. Fine.
It's in the plus, box. It's like window box too. Like, I mean, you don't get the full
yes.
frame. I mean,
well,
I know
that
that's a limitation
another,
of 3D.
Like,
yeah.
10 frames. So a two frame per second game wasn't in the cards, I don't think.
I don't know if you guys did play. I didn't this time, but before when on the Switch, you play 2-player. It like cuts the normal frame rate in half. Mm-hmm. It's like literally unplayable. Like the type of thing, like Nintendo put this out and then they actually put it on the Switch too, you know, and it's like, oh, for something that's so known for quality, this is like one of the things like, oh, maybe they were reaching a little bit on this.
I would say they finally put it on the Switch because Nintendo did a really good job of like burying this and pretending it didn't ever exist. So yeah. It was nice to see them finally like give it a nod and put it on the Super NES Classic and the Switch, and like it needed to come to the light of day. I personally think.
No, I agree with you. I really do feel that. I mean, Nintendo kind of made that deep cut, and so going on the Switch out of all the racing games that are on the Super Nintendo, and even a couple of the ones that we're talking about tonight, that for them to say, yeah, Stunt Racer FX, whatever stupid name it is, we should slap that on the Switch. And so I think that is really cool that they're willing to expose it a little bit more.
I mean, but look at this, like no other racing game, not on home console, maybe PC. What's your next comparison to
Virtual Racing?
Virtual Racer is a good one, or hard driving, right? Like this was unprecedented. This is more polished. They did it on a single cart with the use of a chip. The frame rate kind of sucks, but I think that was due to, you know, what RAM cost at the time, or like what these processing chips cost. I've seen videos since where people swap those chips out. It runs at a higher frame rate. Ultimately, it's a better game, but still, for what it was, I don't know. I think it's kind of a showpiece. I mean, I'm biased because this is a game that I 100%ed multiple times to the point where I'd get it done, I'd delete my save state, I'd go back and like recomplete it all again. It's difficult because it's a game about learning to cope with its shortcomings to get the enjoyment out of it, to become a good racer. But I don't know. I have a hard time condemning it for that because when we were kids back then, like you got that one game, like that was my game for 6 months. And I loved the way it looked. I loved the way that like I had this 3D game that shouldn't exist on my console. And I don't know. I like the goofy eyes. I like the fact that there's a bonus bicycle character to help you get your highest speed trials at the end of the game, because you had to like bust your ass to complete the game 100% to get that bike. And then you had to bust your ass on top of that to like get the fastest times. And it was all about anticipating like turns, because I would say it's a game less about like learning how the controls work, and it's a game more about learning how the frame rate works, so you can anticipate what you need to be doing ahead of time to get through that corner, which is a weird thing to say, but it almost becomes part of the gameplay, the fact that it's latent, I guess. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly has its charm. Like you said, the models are great, and the way they explode kind of too, and then reform.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. I mean, it's definitely a better looking game than Star Fox, but I feel like Star Fox plays better. And I don't know if that's like Star Fox doesn't have the greatest frame rate either, but so I don't know why they were able to pull off better handling in that.
Well, at least nobody told me to do a barrel roll, I guess, in Stunt Racing.
No barrel. That's true.
Sounded just like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not at all bitter about that conversation. I guess we'll move.
Oh, it wasn't that game. Bad. Relax. Let's move on to something better,
They really should have made like Excite Bots when that came out. They should have made that Stunt Race characters instead.
Close, wasn't it? Yeah, you're right. You know, I've owned that for years and I've still never played it, but I don't know, it came out clearance for like $3. Remember Kmart Kids? next game, Rock and Roll Racing with an N, because it's cool. Exclamation point. If you didn't catch that, my tone. With music and engines screaming, pick your car, drivers and weapons, and slam into gear, the world famous racer. A race announcer, world famous. Tell me if you guys have heard of him. Larry Supermouth Huffman
Absolutely.
Anybody? Okay, he's famous. At the mic and some of the greatest rock and roll music of all time, setting the tone, it's time for the line. Using laser cannons, cluster bombs, super boosters to annihilate your competition, your racing skills are pitted against truly gruesome field of lead-footed crazies as you race to different planets.
I love that description. It looks like they just threw everything in there.
Who's Larry Supermouth Huffman?
Wasn't he the guy that did NBA Jam?
It doesn't sound right, but maybe. I don't know.
Could be.
I mean, I just apologized for my butchering of history before, so.
Maybe it wasn't. I feel like he was.
It's kind of got the same tone.
Yeah.
I mean, I could look.
I feel like we need a fact check there.
The computers are working on it.
The results are in. Ladies and gentlemen.
Larry Huffman obituary, so uh-oh. I'm thinking it's not the same guy. No, it's not the same dude, I don't think.
Close, though.
Maybe.
Relative.
He was in game.
This might be the best voice in a console game I've heard. Like, they really spent a lot of resource on that, I think.
I think they spent a lot of resource and budget on that and trying to make bad assimilations of good rock music and questionable choices on occasion, where they maybe could have spent a little more on the game design.
I almost to the point where, like, are they doing this so they don't get sued? Like, are they like,
oh yes,
it's just
like the table putting these in.
I think that was my first question was, did they really make deals with all these people? You know, I'd love to know if they actually did. Yeah, most likely not. It was just slightly off where it's a little unrecognizable.
I don't know. I mean, it's close enough, like Crewball on the Genesis. I'm sure they licensed these songs.
You really think so?
I would almost admit. They led with it because of the whole title. Like, I think that's the whole gimmick, you know?
Yeah, they just re-released this game and they put like this actual songs in it.
Really?
Like they licensed the.
Oh, that's right. The Blizzard collection. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got the like CD quality.
Interesting.
Songs in there.
Here's what I appreciate about the game. So I'm a big fan of this game because I like RC Pro-Am and I love, the Ivan's, off-road on the NES.
Yeah.
And so it plays very similar where it's slightly chaotic when you're like trying to figure out the turns and just that angle that it kind of sets you up at. You're trying to turn right and you're kind of going uphill. I don't know. It's there's a charm to that I really appreciate. And I mean, you can't really go wrong with battling other vehicles and grinding all the way through, and I really appreciated that. And it does seem a little over the top where they're throwing, you know, everything in the kitchen sink. They're like, oh, if we didn't get you with blowing up cars, we'll get you with heavy metal, and then we'll get you with, you know, XYZ. But I think overall it's a really solid game personally.
Yeah, and like it's funny because like your comparisons to RC Pro-Am and Ivan, because like it's RC Pro-Am from a gameplay perspective for me. It's Ivan with the inner race upgrades. I had a little different take on it though, because like I think Ivan benefits from a single screen. You know where you're at all times.
Yep.
RC Pro-Am has always like effed you with you have to anticipate and memorize courses.
Yep.
And this game stuck with that. Probably for its detriment, and that isometric sort of angle, even though they have the grid on the track, and it's totally manageable. You can learn it, you can get through it. Once you know the course, it's like, and I'm not saying I don't like it. It's a great game, but it is almost like they're putting lipstick on a pig. You know what I mean? It's like they could have done some things to make the racing experience better while still have like had this cool heavy metal theme to it. But instead they kind of really went for the theme and maybe could have made a little better gameplay. It's still totally manageable. Like I said, it's just, it's a memorization racing game, which isn't as good as like an intuitive feeling racing game is really my only complaint. But yeah, to your point, if you're a fan of either of those franchises, you're gonna love this game. It's good.
Was I'm trying to remember the RC Pro-Am games. Were they as zoomed in as this game was? Like, I felt like this was, you're watching the map. You're hardly even looking right at the car at this point.
Right.
Yeah. I think the sprite size being bigger, you're correct, did make this a little more congested feeling. And it's then, really not a problem until you start getting like the crisscross tracks and stuff. And it's like, oh, if I'm slightly off on this angle, like I just screwed the pooch in this whole thing, you know?
And that always and confuses like, me. The crisscross, like, do I turn? Do I not turn? Especially if you're either way behind or way ahead and you don't know, you can screw yourself really fast.
Yeah. And like, you know, a lot of those early isometric games kind of, there was like either you're turning or you're turning really hard. There's only like two states that you're in.
Yeah.
Where like this, I feel like you can just be slightly to the right, slightly to the left, and you can't hardly even see it in, you know, the way you're driving until you hit the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super touchy. You're right. Especially when you're like trying to anticipate those power-ups that you missed in the previous lap. You're just like, nobody can see that, but the sound effects was me swerving left and right for the audio listeners.
I thought it was giving yourself personal. Hey, yo.
Power up. Yeah.
Are we doing a Byron Burn on the soundtrack?
Maybe.
We should one of these days.
Yeah.
Byron Burn just strictly on soundtracks.
You could almost tell from the game design that the developers kind of realized that they had made a super touchy product because every track has that grid pattern. And it only has that grid pattern, not because it's futuristic and cool, but because it's the only way you can gauge depth. Yeah. There's really your sprite doesn't zoom in and out. Like, that's your only indicator.
Yep.
Which it's smart that they laid that on the track, but also, you know, a clear indicator that they knew they had an issue and they try to compensate for it. I don't think it ruins the game. But I would have loved to have seen, you know, like RC Pro-Am perfected. Like, how do you really adapt that better? You know, I feel like this is the 16-bit equivalent of RC Pro-Am, and that's awesome. I don't know. I think there could have been some tweak. I don't know what. I don't have suggestions here, but it left me just thinking back to where I got with RC Pro-Am on the NES days. And like, you'd do good, right? You'd memorize it. You'd progress. Then the AI would get super shitty and like ridiculously rubber bandy, and everything just became frustrating to the point that you wanted to put it down.
And I think the point,
I don't know that they got away from that here.
The point of RC Pro-Am, I feel is very different. Yeah. You want to complete the race, but you're also destroying things and,
you destroy stuff in RC Pro-Am. There's bombs and missiles.
Right.
And
I feel like there's definitely some strategy to it, but I feel like the intentions of this is more, I'm going to ram into things and approach it that way. But I could be wrong. Yeah. I could be wrong.
I don't know. I guess I was always so far in the lead that I never had hit anybody else outside the first quarter laps. I'm not sure.
You're so awesome.
All right. Let's talk about the last game. Top Gear 2. So play this game at top speed. You'll scream through 64 cities and 16 countries at 200 plus miles per hour. Experience twisting, turning, flipping, and jumping action, either solo or head-to-head. The more races you win, the more prize money you'll receive. The more money you have, the more upgrades you can buy. Arm yourself with the best engine, tires, armor, transmission, and race day or night, rain, shine, fog, or snow. Top Gear 2, there's nothing half fast about it.
Isn't it more money, more problems? Not more upgrades?
Maybe. The upgrade curve in this game is difficult. You're like, you're starting with zero money. Next engine, $20,000. Good luck.
It's like, it's 20 bucks.
Right. I'll be grinding away for a while.
So Top Gear 2 is very different than 1. We discussed this ahead of time. And, 3 is probably a little more accurate to two than one. One kind of stands by itself. I don't know. I feel like this is a very traditional racing game. You know, the stuff that we grew up playing on the NES, you know, the Rad Racers, etc. And the graphics look great. Really appreciate that. I'm not a huge fan of, yeah, starting with absolutely nothing and grinding your way to, I mean, you just essentially have to buy the turbos and then you're good. But just getting to that point, it takes a lot for me to get excited about that style of game. And the playability and longevity of it, I have a hard time doing. You know, just like Rad Racer, I probably have never gotten past the second level of that. Just I lose interest really fast. That's more of a personal issue, not anything to do with the actual game. But overall, the look is really, really nice, especially when you compare it to these other two games. I think it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely got like the 3D models when the card goes sideways, going through tunnels, like the yelling out, like little caption bubbles. I don't think this is reminiscent of the previous gen. I think it is the evolution of Rad Racer. In fact, I actually think this is more like a indie take on Outrun than anything.
Oh yeah.
It's an ambitious game in scale, right? Cause you're starting out with 18 cars. Like the depth of field in this game is so much greater than most other games at the time. I was a huge fan of, which we've talked about on the show, like Nigel Mansell's, like this is a more arcadey version of this. This is a game that doesn't give a shit if you F up. Like you have to get good if you want to get that number one slot and get the cash money or even top five to get some money to upgrade your stuff. It's punishing. It's punishing from the get-go. If you can't get a good first lap, it's a tough game. You're gonna struggle.
There's no rubber banding.
Yeah, you're not gonna crawl right back.
Yeah, you have to get good at everything. I appreciate it for that, and I think that's why I sunk so much time into this as a kid, is because I had to get that level of skill and like get everything right. And that's why I kept gravitating towards it. And I love the variety. So the other games we talked about, there's different courses or different stuff. Like sure, there's some variations in how tracks look, but like there's not the dynamic.
Pretty one dimensional.
Right. There's no like night and day cycle. There's no rain. There's no terrain differences. This is a like super arcadey game that builds upon what had come before it, but also gives you this whole depth as far as like progression with all the races and just the amount of stuff you have to overcome, I think, to be good at it. I love that it has save points too. And I think every five, six courses you get through, you get like a code so you can restart. It's the only,
which is rare for games like that.
Right. The only thing I can really say that I did not enjoy about this game is I love the soundtrack. It's simple. I love the soundtrack, but you do not get to enjoy the soundtrack because it's essentially a drifting game. So between the constant engine noise and the shrieking of tires around corners, you're not going to hear much else. That could have been better done.
Is anybody concerned about the, like when you win, what that guy looks like? You guys ever, like when you get to the end of the, like the championship guy and he has the bottle of champagne strategically placed. Look it up.
I did not win.
Yeah, I didn't win. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I used to win, but I forgot what that looks like.
Yeah. From my childhood. It up, zoom in there and be like, oh, that's really, really strange.
A little odd.
Yep. So the celebration is very different. So
I think it's a pretty good mix. Like you said, I mean, it's got the Outrun, but it's not quite, it doesn't have the vibe of Outrun, you know, the music and the cruising more of Outrun.
Right.
It's a little bit more serious, but also handles like an arcade. And it's got all that other like upgrade stuff like a Gran Turismo, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
That they had all that stuff in there before you know, all that stuff really took hold and became more simulation racing, which I don't think the Top Gears, the 64 ones, really got into that as much. They were more arcade ones too, weren't they? I don't remember.
Yeah, they're pretty arcadey.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it's pretty good. I mean, also with Rock and Roll Racing, these two formats of racing games were pretty tired.
Yeah.
Probably by the time they came out.
Yep.
So
there's enough of them.
While Ryan is off the camera right now, I can talk about how can't talk about it anymore. He's back. I was gonna compliment Stunt Race Effects for a second, but you're back, so I can't.
Nope. Continue to trash. This was pre-planned.
Yep.
Pre-planned. So what I find is really funny with these three games is, you know, Ryan grew up playing, you know, one of these games. You probably played one of these as well. I feel like all of these got completely overshadowed by like F-Zero or whatever. These never. You know, at that time, they never hit my radar. And so it was, everything was F-Zero. You know, that's the more superior racing game. That's what everyone wants to play, the speed and all of that stuff. And so, unfortunately, these games kind of got overshadowed by it, but I kind of enjoyed playing all three.
I feel like Top Gear 2 was pretty huge and Rock and Roll Racing was pretty big. I mean, F-Zero was great, but it was a launch game, right? It was like, right out there at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. All three are good. I would like them for my collection. I haven't seen them, so.
Yeah, Rock and Roll Racing was the only one that I never played as a kid. Stunt Race and Top Gear 2 I played.
Rock and Roll is the only one that I did play as a kid.
Oh, really?
Because I didn't have a Super Nintendo, so I played the Sega one.
Nice.
And, you know, anytime you went to a friend's and wanted to play a racing game on Super Nintendo, it was Mario Kart, you know, pretty much every time, so. I never really got too much exposure to any of this other stuff.
Right.
Well, is it time to give a verdict on which one we would buy, rent, and burn? And I'll do my best to bite my tongue and not tell you why you're wrong.
Oh, you'll interrupt second of it.
We'll start off with Biff.
All right. This is tough. I think we all discussed this ahead of time. Just some of the like texting it. I feel like it's not super clear on which one's a buy, rent, burn, because I think they all bring something to the table. They're all pretty fun. And I would say as far as race games, they're pretty superior. I'm going to start with my burn is going to be Top Gear 2. I feel that it's good. But I have, again, it's more personal than actual game. I just have a hard time playing those types of games. I just don't get really excited about them. Even to this day, some of the new like racing games, I don't really get into them. It's kind of like sports games for me. So that's going to be my burn, not because it's a crappy game, but I had to pick one. My rent is going to be Race Stunt FX.
Stunt Race FX. Tracks in Japan.
Wild Tracks Japan. That's going to be my rent. I think it's a good game. There's a kiddie factor to it that I wasn't overly excited about playing as an adult now. If the game was strictly the stunt courses and a huge variation of them, it would probably be my buy just because that was really fun. But that is going to be my rent, and my buy is going to be Rock and Roll Racers.
Racins.
Do you want to run the show? Do you want to just keep correcting me?
The name of the game's right. You know what? It's my job.
We've been talking about them for the last 34 minutes. I think people figured it out. So, sorry, that was, again, medication. I'll get back on it. I think it's just got the things that I like, you know, destroying things, rock and roll. I love RC Pro-Am, and this was kind of a nod to that in a little slightly different way. But I would say that that was my buy. Andy, what do you got?
I'm going to agree. My buy is Rock and Roll Racing because it's a pretty good version of that isometric racing. Not quite as good as like off-road. You can't spin a wheel and grab it at the perfect time. But, you know, at the very least, you got good music. You can't have a bad game if you have some of the best music in it, right?
Headphone jack, whatever.
Right. Right. If, can't have the real thing, right? So you got to have the fake stuff. I don't know.
No.
My rent is going to be Top Gear 2. I had no idea what this game was. I would have been all about this game. I mean, when PS1 hit, I was into Gran Turismo like crazy. That was probably my favorite game on that whole system. So many hours into that. And this seems like the prototype of that game. So I think I would have been into that. Although I kind of agree with Nate that once you see one of those behind the back flat track racers, it's just kind of all the same, right? And for my burn, I'm going to go the punk rock band, NOFX.
It's not one of the games.
I'm going to say, just going to say no to effects.
It's not cool. All right.
Hey, you did so good on holding your tongue. Good job.
I'm going to buy Stunt Race FX.
Of course you would. Oh my gosh.
It's fantastic. You guys are haters. It's... You're reviewing it now. You're not getting it in the nostalgia. I immediately
blinded like, I was, by nostalgia.
No, I went back in. I immediately fell back into loving it for the reasons that I did before. I don't know. You have to embrace its shortcomings to realize its awesomeness. I am then going to rent Top Gear 2. That type of game, especially in the Super Nintendo, is right up my alley. Like I said, that and Nigel Mansell's hours spent trying to complete those campaigns. You know, they're not graphical powerhouses, but what they are is a rewarding experience for your dedication to memorization and just twitch reflexes. And I stand by it's kind of an ugly game. I mean, it's got some cool effects, but it's an ugly game for the Super Nintendo. But I don't know. I like that there's 18 cars. I like that I'm drifting around corners and I like the day night cycle. I think that harkens back to my night driver days on the 2600. It wasn't actually night. It's just like black was easier to put on screen than graphics. And I kind of connected with that and I'm going to burn and not because it's a bad game.
Because Nate likes it, but go on.
No, I think we hit on it, right? Like I think we hit on why I'm okay with burning this one. And it's that, it's an approximation of two of my favorite games from the previous console generation, RC Pro-Am and Ivan Stewart's Off-Road Racing. Because of the nostalgia factor, I would gravitate towards both of those before I'd like really want to pick up this. And that's not because it doesn't do a good job of enhancing on those things. It's just, I didn't play this as a kid. It's a good game. It's a really good, all these are great games, to be honest. Nostalgia is taking the day here. So that's where I land, but they're all good.
I think you'd really like virtual racing.
Burning Stunt Race FX, Andy. Shame.
I
you bought me a boxed copy of this game. Why didn't you just set it on fire?
Should have done it right in front of them. Hey, I got you a game.
Let's say at least say do not play Top Gear directly before Stunt Race FX. Play Stunt Race FX first.
Yeah,
and then ramp up.
Yeah, the tier is Stunt Race. Then you have to detransition a step with Rock and Roll Racing. Then you really have to take that last step back to just strictly 2D with Top Gear 2. That's a good precautionary tale. and it's another Byron Bird in the books. So that was a fun one. I Nate and I were talking a little bit yesterday too. It's like, it's tough when you do a buy and burn like that, where I overstayed my welcome in all three of those games. I spent over an hour on all of them. Normally I would give them like, I don't know, 20 minutes to prep for a show. And, I could have kept going in every single case, I think.
Yeah. And all of them are hampered by the time period, right? Like,
right.
Two of them were played out and the other one was not baked enough.
How dare you? How dare you?
It was half baked.
Yep.
Speaking of half baked, I'm back to thinking I should sell most of my collection again. It's a half baked idea that we talk about every 18 months on this podcast. Am I crazy? I'm just thinking I don't use it anymore. I love it, but the joy of hunting because I got everything is gone. Plus, I don't know. It's going to bust eventually, right? People got Biden money right now. They're throwing it on eBay.
So this is kind of interesting because I have one of my topics tonight was kind of about this and something that I've been thinking about a lot as well. There was a point where, and some of it was probably frustration with just some of the like arcade projects that I was working on and whatever else, but I was just kind of laying on my couch and looking around and like, why do I have all of this stuff? And Ryan tends to rub off on me sometimes.
Okay. Context this, Biff. Back it up.
What?
I tend to influence you?
No, you maybe? Rub off on me.
Nope. Not the right wording.
You know, I'm going to stick with that. So Ryan's okay. Rubbing off on me. And
it's not better.
Rubbing me off. I don't know. Anyways. Where you kind of get in that funk and why do I have all this stuff? I got a giant basement and it's filled with crap. And it's crap that I like. I would say that my love towards it is it's a love-hate relationship sometimes.
I know that feeling.
But a way that I kind of got over it, and this is probably a temporary solution, I kind of rearranged things and I moved things around, added some shelves, added a giant arcade in my basement, which made me move everything. And after I did that, I kind of started appreciating the items again. And my kids have been playing a lot more than I have. And that's been kind of cool to see too. So there's a part of me that thinks that maybe they'll, you know, growing up, they might appreciate it a little bit more. I don't know. You know, just like a living room. Sometimes you get bored with the layout and you move a couch, you move a TV, and then you're like, oh, I kind of like this. Maybe that's what you need to do with your game room.
Yeah, but I feel like I can get better functional furniture and it serves a day-to-day purpose. I feel like having this collection that I love but don't use is just a waste in terms of
who uses their collection though. It's called a collection.
I don't. Yeah, sure. But I didn't start out to be a collector, right? I was a gamer.
Yeah.
My passion was playing NES games and I wanted to play more of them and experience more of them. And then that fell off years ago, you know, through not like my love for it isn't gone, but like I have different responsibilities and children. And I don't know. I don't want my NES collection to become something where it's a box full of 2,600 carts under somebody's table. And I feel like the more and more we go to swap meets and the more and more we go, like I haven't been to an expo, obviously none of us have been in a while. It's progressing towards that. So, and even my Jaguar, my God, I love my Jaguar collection.
If you find any Jaguar stuff, take a picture. Let me know.
Because I would buy it. But I think the last time I played my Jaguar was when you were over like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably over 2 years ago.
It's a piece of crap.
No, fuck you. It's amazing. like my Wonder Swan, I think I've turned that on like, boy, when I do my Wonder Swan video, like 7 years ago.
Forever ago.
Close to. So I don't know.
Okay. And like, but I mean, yeah, people that buy antiques and sports cards and all that stuff, like they're not, they don't even have a chance to do anything with them, right?
Sure.
So like you saying that you're not able to, you're not playing it as much doesn't mean take away from what it might mean to you. I mean, you're just not into the game part in general. I don't think it has to do with the amount of collection. I mean, you haven't played your TurboGrafx mini yet, have you? Like
called out.
So like that has nothing to do with the collection.
This thing completely in box?
Yeah.
No.
That doesn't have anything to do with like having a million carts that you don't use at that point. It's just, you're not.
Yeah, but
even when it's convenient, you're not necessarily, you know.
Right. That's the thing is like, I thought the setting up my new game room the way I have where everything is like easy to grab would be the thing, but I'm almost to the point where like, I just want the space for something different. Like I almost just don't even like the room I'm sitting in right now. I could do something else with, I don't know.
Make a love room.
Yeah, I'd probably need a new wife too, but
a little 50 Shades of Grey action.
Yeah. Well, you can come over here and I'll rub off on you like that. I don't know. Like I go through it and like, I just don't know. I mean, I know I would keep some, right? And I was watching My Retro Life and I was watching his video explaining why he sold off his collection. And for anyone who's watched his YouTube channel, it's all about like the videotapes and like the nostalgia and like rewatching him and his dad collect these games together. And he explains that he sold off his collection because he realized that his drive to continue collecting, even though he loved it, was just like pointless, and that it was forming the new memories with his kids. So he sold everything off and now he just collects games that him and his kids, his daughter can like, they're redoing it, right? Like it's modern day, like he's doing for his kids what his dad did for him. And I think I could maybe be okay with that. Like if I got rid of the backlog, and just started going like current, like let's say previous gen forward with my kids, I think I could probably get behind that. Cause I could emulate so much I think the thing that I hesitate more on than anything is dealing with selling it. Like, because I have such an attachment to so much of it for certain reasons and like how I got it and deals and locations. Like, I think I would have a
memories
problem with
me.
Yes. With a lot of people, I think the hardest part would be like somebody nickeling and diming me over that
and that's why I'll just buy it, hang on to it.
But
for you.
I don't want you to have it either, because that doesn't fix my problem, because I'm going to see it at your place, which I know sounds horrible, but
yeah, but you can come over and pet it anytime.
Yeah.
I mean, you've talked about just even paring down a lot too. I mean, you still have a lot of stuff that you probably aren't really attached to.
Right. I know.
When I went we probably talked about this a while back when I came over to your house because you wanted to sell a few items. That was hard for you. I could tell.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
When I go over to your place and I see those things, and I get pissed that I sold them to you. And it doesn't, like, again, that it sucks.
I'll give you a good deal. Yeah, I mean, I could tell that something that you're like, wow, this storage thing is cool. And I know it's so stupid that I have it because it's sitting in my garage, not even in my game room. That was hard for you to even part with. And I didn't even ask about it. But yeah, some of those items that weren't even in your game room, we have a hard time. So that'll be kind of interesting if you actually start pulling more games, stuff like that.
I would have to like approach somebody and be like, give me your price on buyout of X systems. Like, I mean, that's how I would have to do it. Like, I just couldn't like bear to list things out like
one at a time and just,
right.
Yeah, that would be tough.
Good.
I mean, after I go through it. Course.
I'll sell it to Andy. Andy can give you a deal. How's that
Andy gives me good deals.
D-
deal.
He'd probably give me better deals. Better deals. And he gives me good deals too. And so do you. And like, that's part of the reservation too, is like all these people that helped me get all this stuff all this time. It's like, what do you do then? Like, you know, I don't know.
I haven't given you squat.
Didn't I get an NES box from you or a couple of Virtual Boy box? I mean, not that I didn't. I gave you a Turbo and we're pretty fair to each other. I think between the three of us, we usually generally.
I gave you that Atari 2600 box. Was it 2600 or 5200?
26. Yeah. It's in the back room still.
Memories. And that thing's immaculate, by the way.
That box is. You're thinking about the controller.
The controller. Yeah. Controller was minty fresh. I thought it was a repro.
It's a good one. So I got it.
It's a good one. It's somewhere.
I was just looking up at it because like there I've got that. And then I've got that factory sealed Baldi's that Andy gave me. So that's what I'm talking about. Like that's the stuff is like, how do you look at that crap and get rid of it?
Our listeners right now are packing up their cars and they're like, heading to North Dakota.
They're like, he's having a bad week again. I do this every 18 months. I'm like, I should sell everything. That just makes the most sense. But I don't know.
Don't do anything crazy.
I won't.
The most room takes, I mean, the stuff on the walls, that's just walls, right? That's decoration. But the thing that takes up stuff that I even look at, like, I have this CRT with, you know, 20 some consoles hooked up to it at a moment's notice and I never use it. You know, it's like, just use an emulator right away. So it's like, well, that part takes up a lot of room and it's like, well, maybe that's the part that just needs to go away. I don't know. But then that's also the part that you're like saying, these are decorations now. These are not games.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you're right on the convenience piece because, like, yeah, I set up this whole entertainment center when I moved in to, like, be like, I want to be able to play any game at any given time. And, like, the reality is that I almost haven't done that. So, like, yeah, you know, I could almost dismantle the console shelf, wall mount the TV, add another row of shelves, and probably be content for the most part and then pull something out of the box if I needed to. But,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just been tough. Like I've been mulling it over seriously again. And it's not, Nate and I talk about it too. It's not that I don't love gaming. It's not that I don't love the memories I've had with it and that I'm not passionate about it and want to continue to talk about it. It's just, do I need all this? I don't know.
Yeah, you're just being realistic. I mean, really none of us have the time to play it.
Yeah.
You know,
we barely have time to podcast anymore, which is the reality of it.
I feel like in this vulnerable moment, we need to attack. Like the inner collector in me is like, let's get them. But the friend in me is like, it's okay, buddy. We've all been there. So I'm really tormented right now with the angel and demon on my shoulder. Thing. I know. Yeah. But now that you're like, I'm going to sell, I'm like, I'm going to buy it all.
I mean, I've never had that. I've always been like, oh, this is going for 50. Goodbye.
You're like,
so I've never had that, but
I'll get it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
You bring up a good point. Like, I think it was different for me when like I was a kid collect, cause I started young, right? College, high school, hustling. And I sold some stuff and like, I got more back into it, but I think it was different when it was work. Like I had a budget, I had limited time. I still had responsibilities, but like, well, one, there was still the possibility of finding the rare gem out in the wild. It's different when you progress to a position where, my goal was to get a complete Nintendo Entertainment Collection. I've worked to a point where if I wanted that, that's within my grasp. Mm-hmm. That's not a question, but that's not what was fun about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, that's a huge thing for me too. And like that curved like downward so much my incentive to chase that. I don't know and that sounds stupid, but it's true. Like it really did affect how I looked at it. Like when I deviated from my, I will not pay $5 more than $5 for anything like rule. And then as that became more of a stretch goal and then as became not a problem at all, I don't know.
All at the same time is that's becoming the requirement to finish.
100%. You know? Yes. Yeah.
Is paying that.
You're not going to find those top 100 games in a dustbin at a garage or at a thrift store marked incorrectly. And there's so many NES games that were well over that threshold the last few years. But
yep.
I don't know. I'm sure I'll have a different perspective in a couple months, maybe. But if not, check Andy's Amazon account, I guess.
Whoa.
All sorts of games.
Oh my gosh. You picked him over me, huh? That's how we're going to do it. You have to choose now. I want this in a will. I
can't do it.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'll leave it to Cestus. About that.
All right, buddy. You got it all. Congratulations. Make your way to the U.S. Come to North Dakota. You heard it. Ryan's going to give it all away. Be swimming
in Amiibos.
It'd be worth the journey. Yeah, you can. Oh, God, the Amiibo. Yeah, you have to take them all boxed.
All of them. You cannot open the box, though. You must keep the boxes. That's awesome. So I have some news that you guys are not excited about, but I think it's worth talking about. The new Fortnite season dropped last week, and I was actually kind of excited about it. I kind of dropped out of Fortnite for a while, and seeing my son, you know, Epic does a good job of putting a timer on some of the screens that, you know, something new's coming, maybe a new season, and sometimes they're really good at changing it. So they do that quite often, is pushing out the dates. But to see my son so excited about this, to the point where it's probably like 5 a.m. and he's like, "Dad, it's time, let's go." And we were downstairs and watching the new video together, to see him so excited about that, like us being excited about new releases of our, you know, being kids or whatever, this was that for him. And so that just made me, even though the game is, you know, controversial in this podcast of whether it's good or worth your time or whatever, like, that was cool that he was so excited about that. And I really appreciate what Fortnite was doing this season. So obviously there's a weird story and weird backstory and all that stuff, but they kind of paid tribute to some cool video game characters in there. So obviously Lara Croft was chosen. And first of all, I think it's funny.
What does chosen mean? Do they get like a letter like the Smash characters, or how does this work?
So it's like skins, you know, it is transactional. Of course, if you have the battle pass, and you know, my son never, we had to buy the battle pass once, and it was $9.99, and then you work up tiers, and as you progress, you get skins or V-Bucks or whatever it is. And so I taught him to save your V-Bucks, and at the end you have enough for the next battle pass, and so you never have to buy another battle pass, just use those V-Bucks that you get. And so that's what he's done. And so you just have to do it one time. And as long as they don't get a little trigger happy going through the shop and, "Oh, I just spent all my V-Bucks and now you're screwed." But yeah, so they have the Lara Croft skin. So you had to get to level, I don't know, it might have been like level 10 to get that. And then there's different variations of that, which was really cool. They have a Street Fighter package, which is cool, you know, the Chun-Li's and Ryu's and all of that stuff. And so it's cool that Fortnite is this big juggernaut in the video game world, especially on impressionable young people. And it's cool that they're kind of paying homage to some of these characters, where my son's like, who's Lara Croft? And, you know, explaining it, which I think is funny anyways, because I was telling Ryan, as they were jumping out of the battle bus, my son always zooms the screen down to her butt. And I was like, "Oh, buddy, those were the days of PlayStation when we were like getting her in a corner and zooming around. And
he texted it to me. I was like, yeah, I was more of a back her into a corner and zoom in her tits kind of guy. But
yeah, it just, you know, the things that we did as kids that I was catching them doing, it was so funny. But I think that brought me a lot of joy and kind of got me back into it, where he's just been excited about it and excited about the progression of levels and all that kind of stuff.
So you said something interesting, and like, I get Lara Croft, but like, isn't it sort of bonkers to have Street Fighter characters from like a fisticuffs fighting game carrying guns? Does he just Hadouken everything, or what happens?
No, it is like carrying guns. So it's a little,
so fucking weird.
It is so bizarre. And even seeing the characters in this form is strange, but that's kind of what Fortnite does. They cartoon them up or whatever it is. But and he loves Street Fighter. We've talked about that a lot. Like, he loves Street Fighter, and for him to be like, oh my gosh, right, use it. I'm like, oh man, this kid is so excited about Fortnite. And so we've been playing quite a bit. I've been trying to get other people to play that hate the game.
Yeah, you asked me, and then I sent you like some meme where it was like, Fortnite be like, and it's just a robot pressing the same button over and over again. Which Fortnite, I will give Fortnite credit, it is not like that. It is just not a game that I get into, but there's still like way more people that love it than hate it. So
your son's into it, right?
My son loves it. Yeah. He was playing it earlier today too. And then his Switch died. He's like, I was about to eat a golden apple and I ran out of battery. I'm like, charge your Switch, son. Like, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, kids haven't hopped in there yet. I'm sure they know about it, but they haven't even asked. Surprised.
Yeah, but like, my son still has like 40,000, so $40 in V-Bucks from his birthday last November. Because I still cannot get the Epic Games Store to allow me to properly link my Nintendo Switch ID.
Oh my gosh.
And I think my only option is to uninstall the game. I don't know, but like, I get so frustrated, I just put it down and never went back. And he stopped asking, so what a convoluted mess.
That's interesting, like with the talk we just had about how we have the stuff from our kids' childhood around us and be like, oh, I'm excited about this. This is why I have this. And like, you know, your son has that same excitement about this thing right now that, you know, 10 years from now, it doesn't exist. It's just going to be in the air, you know?
Right, just a memory.
Just like some PlayStation games. Like,
remember
games?
That one time? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a perfect segue because, they just, like, this has happened. There's been precedent, right, with other services and the Wii Shop, but Sony just announced that they're pulling the plug on the store for PS3, Vita, and PSP, which I haven't done my research to see if that means you can re-download things that are technically in your possession or not, but I have a huge backlog for all those consoles, well, not the PSP. Well, actually, that's not true, because of the Vita I do too, through PlayStation Network, and I've run out of space on all of those devices to download more. So I'm potentially flushing a ton of these games away. Now, you can make the argument that during those era of those consoles, most of that stuff got printed to disc, which is true. But there's a lot of indie stuff. Even the PS3 particularly pushed that hard for a while. Mm-hmm. And those games are just going to be forever wiped as of this summer, which is sucky. And it's just the reality of a digital era, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, even a lot of first party stuff. They made a lot of first party digital stuff, and it's just gone.
Yeah, and you know, back to thinking about selling, like, to me, that's almost my reason to just, okay, if I can't re-download what's technically in my possession for my Vita, I might as well get rid of it. I have like 8 Vita games, and I have the Vita PlayStation TV. So I don't even have the true Vita. So most of what I could play was PSP games that were given to me free through PSN. Or indie games. And if I can't access those now, like, that thing is pretty much a brick to me. You know, I guess I could hack it. But that's a huge disappointment.
Yeah. I guess I didn't look into that myself either, but I'm assuming if they're shutting down the store, that means they're shutting down the download part of it too, right?
I would think so. I think that's kind of, that was the ultimatum with the Switch or the Wii eventually. It was like, yeah, it's just get it while you can and have it downloaded because, right, you're not going to keep those servers spinning forever.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, 5 years from now, are there like, oh, this PS3 has this game on it and, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that really happened with the Wii or not.
Oh, that'd be really interesting, selling whole systems.
I mean, there were people selling PT for a while, like other PS4s, but like that even became more complicated because you couldn't even hook it up to the internet. Otherwise it would wipe it. I would imagine, I mean, there's got to be some resourceful people out there who are like backing these up like they did with the WiiWare, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the sad part is like the stuff that is truly lost. Like it sucks that you have to resort to piracy to get to experience something that a group of people put so much effort into and wanted you to play. Granted, they wanted to make revenue off of it too, but nobody wants their work lost for all time, right? I think people would rather give it away for free than have it just disappear altogether.
Yeah. I think so too. At least give a last hurrah about it, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because like when they were mentioning that and they're talking like PSP, I was like, what? What? And then I forgot. Oh, yeah. The PSP Go, like the only like all digital.
Oh, yeah. That like, thing's going the garbage now.
Yeah. Well, and those are like a mod machine, right? Like that's why everyone started buying them. Was like, I'm just going to mod this and have everything. Yeah. But yeah, it's crazy.
Well, it's even worse when you heard the news about what potentially is wrong with the PS4s.
Oh.
There's some hacker out there basically claiming that if the internal clock battery dies on your PS4, you cannot play any of your digital games or any discs.
What?
Yeah. Just
I read that as well.
Basically bricks the system. It just bricks the system.
Can you replace the battery?
I'm sure you can replace the battery and it would probably boot up and be fine again, but that's nuts.
That is nuts. How did this come about? Like it went on his or what?
It's all due to the trophies. Like they didn't want people messing around with like date and time on trophy data. So they like hard coded it into something that bricks the system.
Well, maybe they can patch that at least before it becomes like a mass problem.
Yeah, right? I'm sure they're working hard on that.
I mean, I would hope. That's bullshit.
These hackers are you gonna do, just not buy the PS5?
I mean, you don't have an option. You're not going to get their next gen console. So
it's quite the news to come out at the exact moment of the, you know, closing the digital stores.
Yeah. Well, it's funny too, because since we're down the PlayStation rabbit hole, there was like that exploit that came out 27 years after the PlayStation. So somebody made some software called Tony Hacks, and you can use a save state on a memory card for PlayStation 1, boot up Tony Hawk 1 or two or three, go into the create a character menu, and then this, because of the save state, loads this hack, and you can then boot burned games without modding, complete soft mod, no adjustment to your PlayStation console at all. It's kind of incredible. Granted, you have to spend like, what, 2 to 3 minutes to get through the loading screens, get into the menu, but still neat. I don't know how many people need to do that these days, but I just love that Tony Hawk is
the entry point,
pushing the way for piracy on the PlayStation. It just as many consoles as it's sold, it will now jailbreak, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of piggybacking off of that Fortnite thing too, a little bit. I'm pretty excited for that Monster Hunter Rise coming out on Friday. And I'm really eager to get back into another Monster Hunter experience. So like Nate, I'm really planning on buying two copies. My son is such a freak that I think he'll love.
I think he could do it.
I think he will love the ins and outs of how you get good at a game like that. So beyond some of like the language barrier stuff, I'm really looking forward to him kind of getting in there with me and just like tackling some of these monsters. From the early reviews I've heard, it's kind of a weird thing. Like they're saying it's almost like they took what Monster Hunter was before and tried to push quality of life and like get to the action faster improvements into the series, but almost in a separate way than World did. It's almost like they forgot World existed and they don't implement much of anything from that, but they make different quality of life improvements. Which I guess
the more tracking stuff,
right? Well, no. So that's the thing, is they give you an owl that does the tracking and eliminates the paintballs. They give you a dog so you can run to the animal faster.
I feel like you're speaking in code right now.
Yes. And they give you a firefly like whiplash thing so you can quickly rebound and get back to enemies before they take off and discontinue your fight. So it sounds like it's a step and a half back, but then like a step forward from what it had been. But if everyone's kind of saying like, it doesn't make as much sense to make it more approachable in the way that World did. But if you want to just get into the action faster and have less of a lasting end game, like this is sort of where this lands, which I think is good enough for me. I think I just want to get into more Monster Hunter, and I've done enough of the grinding and the tracking bullshit that I just want to fight stuff and get more gear. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to grab two copies and I'm going to try and get my son into that. I think it'd be nice to have a constant companion, because it was a little rough kind of going through World and not always having somebody to play with. I mean, Andy and I went through with the majority of that together. I'd say like halfway through the game, probably the last 20 hours we did together. And then we hit that like new game plus mode and we're like, yeah, you know what? 50 hours is good.
The grindy, you know, all they need to do is before you head out on mission, say, if you kill this monster, this is what you're going to get.
Yes. Need to fix the matchmaking to where it rubber bands a little more and allows it needs to be more lenient, because like you just box yourself out of friends so fast for playing the game.
Yeah, because what was it, three people? It was like almost impossible, right?
Yeah. Yep. It sucked because everybody had to be within X amount of levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the thing. It was like I got super amped when they announced Iceborne and I really wanted to get back into it. But then I realized there was no way I could convince anybody else. And I just did not want to do that grind on my own. And I haven't. So,
yeah.
But yeah, if either of you guys too want to Monster Hunter it up again, I've
been curious.
I'm all for it.
But I need someone to hold my hand all the way through.
It is definitely a good old fashioned find a wiki or watch some video kind of game. Like it is. It's archaic in a way that games aren't anymore, but it's enjoyable almost in spite of that. It's weird.
It's kind of like, here's a million weapons, pick one, and now you have to live with this weapon for the rest of your life. Because it's so, you have to learn it.
And you have to memorize, and it's so tough too, because like you're memorizing tells on enemies and like learning when like their animation for like, I've been hurt. Like you have, it's such a weird game because there's no life bars on anything, right? It's like, you're just learning tells of a character model. It's something else, but when it's on and you're into it, it's a really good high. Like probably some of the most rewarding victories in gaming. Yep. I mean, it's the same reason people love Dark Souls and Bloodborne and that kind of stuff. It's less punishing in most respects, but. Yeah, so that'll be out Friday. We'll see. I'll have time this weekend to play it. So.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Loop Hero.
Yeah, so explain this to me. Like, I don't know.
I don't think I can.
And that's it.
It's kind of like one of those idle games, but it's not really idle. So you're watching something, but you constantly have to interact with it, even though you're not doing anything with it. You're not doing the action part of it.
What is this on?
Steam. I'm playing it on Steam. I think it's PC only right now, but I don't know. There's something deep in me that I like the, you know, RPG part of things where numbers go up, and this constantly is like, hey, this gear's better. Get this. Kind of like Diablo without doing the action. If that makes any sense.
What? No, that doesn't make any sense.
Half the game is like looking over at the other stuff, but all the new gear that you're like, this gear, I could do, you know, get 1% of this, and oh, this regen on this, and it's most of the game is that sitting in a Diablo menu trying to figure out what's the best armor. And
I stopped reading that stuff in Diablo. I was like, this one kills people. I'm going to go with this one because it kills people.
Shiny, yes. So what do you do from a gameplay perspective then to get this gear? I'm curious.
So there's a track, which is like the loop, and your little hero goes around and around and around it. It's kind of like a board game, goes around and you're setting pieces down from different cards. So that's you build a deck of different cards and they all have different effects on, you know, what monsters spawn and different combinations and stuff like that. And then after a certain amount of cards that you lay down, then there's a boss. And so it's very much a roguelike kind of in that regard. And it's basically setting up your best, getting the best armor and best combos in your armor to beat the boss.
Okay.
It's really tough to explain.
I don't think I would enjoy this, but I could see like how this is your sort of thing for sure.
Yeah. I think a person is going to hate it or love it. It's one of those two, but I'm kind of getting toward the end of it too, because it just like a lot of these games, they get longer, you know, roguelikes, the farther you get in the game, each run gets longer and longer.
Right.
And if you don't end up getting the right combination of stuff, because it's all random anyway, at the end, it's like, well, I just wasted an hour, you know?
Right. So, and then you get pissed and you don't want to pick it back up.
Yeah. I'm kind of at that point at this game. I think I'm on the third boss and I'm just like, nah, it's okay.
Hmm. Sounds confusing. Is this
pretty new then?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know. But, you know, my wife has been trying to, you know, she's like, oh, we should play a game.
Gotcha.
She, you know, likes Harvest Moon and all those. We don't do that anymore.
No more
baby
kids.
Number 10 coming.
They don't call me Loop Hero for nothing. But there's, you know, not a lot of games anymore that are split screen that work really well split screen.
Right.
And she loves Harvest Moon, the, you know, farming simulators, that type of stuff a lot. And I think she would like crafting games. She hasn't really played one before. And I guess Minecraft works, but there's a lot on Game Pass like Astroneer and all this other stuff that I think would be kind of fun, but they're all online multiplayer. So question is,
yes,
get another console.
I already have the other console, but do
you
I
have to get the
buy
other account?
Yeah. And then are we playing like across the rooms, or are we putting two TVs together, or I saw
you
a guy
need
with
to
a
be
setup
close enough that you don't need to use headphones to chat back and forth.
Yes. Sure.
I think it's worth it though.
Yeah.
From a cost perspective. Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to be buying new games as they come out and just relying on Game Pass for 70% of your stuff. Sure. You've got two consoles, right? You still have an extra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally do it. 100%.
What are you waiting for? Yeah. Get it done.
I know.
Right now.
I saw a setup of two TVs right next to each other and then a very large TV on top of that. So you know, a couple plays to the game on the below, and then they just watch something in the background on the top. That sounds cool, but it seems like it's a lot.
Here's what you do. You already have that giant DLP TV in your bedroom still, right?
Yes.
How do you know that?
We've talked about it. Does anybody want it?
Nobody wants it.
Okay.
I've known this for years now. So you keep that there. Then what you do is you go to Walmart and you get two of those like cheap ass, like 720p, 32 inch monitors. You put those directly on the ceiling above your each respective side of your bed. You have nightstands, which
who
are consoles
that they
going
each
to
have the side. Maybe they all both sleep in the middle.
Sure. Either way, this still works. And then you each have your console on your nightstand on each side, and then you just run your HDMI cord up. You can lay in bed just look straight up at the gaming, and then if you want to watch TV, it's down there for a distraction. This is perfect.
Yeah.
Maybe get a little frisky on occasion. And that vibrations, you know, you just slide that haptic feedback over to her side of the bed. Just see.
Yeah. Get those webcams going up on the top of the top screens.
Yeah. I don't know why. Like, it's always been my dream setup is to just have like a TV on my ceiling in my bedroom so that I could be so lazy that I don't even have to move my head to just intake.
I wouldn't trust the mouth.
Yeah.
No, and that's my fear too. Like, but TVs are so light now. TVs are so light. Like, you could almost get away with it as long as it wasn't directly mounted over your face. Like, you're maybe just going to get like a poke in the rib cage. You'll be fine. Right.
Just laying down, waking up with someone dead next to you because of TV.
Want to hear the story about how I lost my left testicle? It's a good one. Yeah. No, I think to your point, I think it's totally worth it. It sucks that you have to pony up for the extra subscription.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's like something fundamental. Like, I just don't want to do that part of it, buying two online subscriptions for.
That does suck.
There's a way around it.
That's $30 a month. That's less than what people are paying for their cable. It's less than what people are paying for some of their streaming services.
Yeah.
It's worth it. I think that's justifiable.
As long as they don't have to play farming games all the time.
Right.
No, that's the downside to Overwatch.
Right. You don't want to get yelled at. Because if you invest into this and then she's just telling you what a shit gamer you are and how bad you are at the game you're playing, like, you're just paying to have your ego bruised, you know? That's not good.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe I'm just paying for something that I don't need in my life. I don't want that part.
No, I think it'd be totally worth it though. You could almost do that with the Switch, though, right? To a lesser extent, I guess. The library is more limited, I guess. So yeah. I'm just thinking, like, with that family plan thing, you can do that. But really, the only games that you could get by without having to purchase two copies of would be the retro stuff. And that's, you can just sit on a couch and do that anyway.
Right.
Steam, I think you need two copies of everything, right? I believe.
Yes. Yes. At least on Steam, though, most things cost like $3 eventually. Yeah. So, yeah. Just borrow Nate's login when he's not using it. Yeah. I'd give you mine, but my nephew already plays Modern Warfare on that like five nights a week. So, it's a little rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of like, I don't know. I think we're almost moving the direction, right? I think Game Pass has such a presence and is going to continue to have such a presence moving forward that I think, you know, 40% of the game industry will be that platform. I don't think it will cross over to the majority side until further down the road, but I don't know. I don't think you'd be wrong to invest in it early. And you're lucky enough that you have a spouse that is willing to dive in and play games with you, where I'm lucky to get, you know, the passing interest, which is partly my fault. I mean, I guess when, you know, I cheap shot my wife in Smash or pick her up a new Super Mario Brothers Wii and throw her off a cliff because I think it's funny, I shouldn't be surprised that she doesn't want to play games with me. But
I mean, it's not like she's going to play Monster Hunter with me. So it's like,
yeah, that's true.
It's a very select subset of games, I think. But
yeah, then maybe the analysis is on, do I want to play X? I don't know. What do you think she would gravitate towards if you guys did live? Like, what on there now on Game Pass would be?
I think the one I was looking at mostly was Astroneer, which is like a crafting. I think she'd be into that since she's into
crafting survival, you know, or like crafting Minecraft type stuff.
It's crafting, terraforming.
Okay.
Survival. I mean, you're building base and you're building upgrades and stuff like that.
Well, No Man's Sky is on there now. You guys can play that together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least I could get away in that one and be like, where are you? I am just over in this other planet.
That's funny. Yeah. I say go for it.
I'm on the man's planet. my main planet.
Can't do that. There's no gender roles in 2021.
Yeah.
It's the he, him planet.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. Buy a 3-month card and just see how it goes. And
then, see how it goes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I might be done with it after that point.
Right.
I might be like, I don't know where the other Xbox went.
Trial run. I'd say it's worth it. Speaking of Xbox, has anyone like seen a S or an X in a store yet?
No. Nope. I've heard the S has been staying in stock.
And that's what I've heard too. That's what I was gonna ask. Was like I've heard people walking in and seeing the S, so I don't know.
I have not. After our conversation of possibly expanding my arcade to that.
Yeah, what is this again?
Yeah. Which one is this? The naming convention.
Sucks.
But I still haven't. Yeah, I haven't found anything. Even online, I really haven't had any luck finding anything online that's not, you know, scalped out or,
right,
you know, whatever.
I had a PS5 temporarily in my cart at Walmart.
Really?
Yeah, then it crapped out and said it was no longer available. I hesitated too long because I was like, I don't want it. But it's here, I guess. And then it was gone. Yeah. I was like, okay, on to something else.
I mean, we're creeping onto the second quarter now. They said that there would be a massive drop. Actually, this week, it was announced that Amazon was going to be restocked pretty heavily at some point this week. No specific day, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know how they run. And so, I don't know. We'll see what happens here. I still don't know if I'd do it. You know, I might wait.
I still don't need it. I'm not even remotely close to needing it. I'm actually getting to the point with my PC that I'd probably be fine with, until the killer app drops, I'd be fine with just my PC and whatever next Nintendo console comes out. I'm good.
Yeah. The Switch U.
I like PlayStation exclusives, but they don't really have any that I really want on the way. And it seems like there's a decent amount of problems going on with PS5. With controllers and heating. And well, so it's kind of like, well, maybe just hold on until they maybe tweak.
And Sony's kind of like started that initiative of like, yeah, it might be 18 months later, but it could come to the PC, you know? So
yeah,
true. I guess if I could wait and it runs, oh, I mean, granted, there were problems with a lot of the stuff they brought over to PC, but let's assume that gets better. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. Like nothing tickles my fancy with next gen except maybe the S. And the only reason I want the S is just so I'd have another option to have my Game Pass games in a different room in my house. And that's the price point. Strictly it. Well, that's it. Yeah, it's $299 for a Game Pass machine is how I look at that.
Yep.
And that's totally reasonable to me. Like, sure. Cause I mean the prices on ones right now are crazy high, even for used stuff. It's crazy. My brother-in-law sold his, I can't believe what he told me he got. It was like, I want to say it was like almost $200. And it wasn't even I don't even know if it was the Xbox One S. I think it might've been the original OG. And
wow.
Somebody bought it like off Facebook within hours.
Just cause you can't buy them anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. You still can't. It's crazy.
Jeez.
Totally crazy.
Huh. I think I'm going to get the X.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like if you're going to get into the next one, you might as well get the next gen one.
Yeah, the extra bells and whistles, right?
Yeah. The S just seems like it's just like an X that was allowed into the party.
Right. I kind of like the oddity of it. Plus, I like the fact that I'd never put a disc into it because I don't buy Xbox games. Like I stopped early on. I never got into it. So like it is mostly just digital for me. Like, I don't know. Weird. Especially for so hardcore I was with 360 in the original, like that one just really killed it.
That is weird. Like I've definitely played my Xbox more than the PS4 this time. Just because of Game Pass, but
Right.
Yeah, I hardly have any physical copies of Xbox One.
Yeah. Well, they all end up at like $6 within 2 years. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, you almost feel like an idiot for buying them early.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of physical copies, I'm going to deviate a little bit from, I mean, not too hard from what we usually talk about, but one of my favorite bands, probably maybe my favorite band of all time, up there.
Backstreet Boys. There.
Backstreet Boys. MXPX announced, they teased it 2 Fridays ago. They finally reacquired all the rights, publishing rights to all of their stuff. Box set, all 10, not cover albums, but like original full-length releases, full 10 albums, remastered, original masterings remastered for vinyl, colored vinyl, double LPs on 4 of the records with a side D that has logos, a book of all the fan letters that have been written to them. They picked a bunch and photocopied them in. Cool box set, and then a new slip mat for your turntable. And they announced it. I was in. I was hoping it'd be cheaper than it was. And then they said there's going to be 1,500 copies, and it was limit 2. And I was like, I have to get this. And then I told Jill, and this was before the price was announced, I'm like, I think I'm going to buy 2. Because here's my reasoning behind this. Besides the fact that, like, this is sort of my childhood in a box, when I did a Kickstarter and backed there, when they kind of came back from, like, I think it was 7 years it took them to get this album out, they reformed. So for anyone who's not familiar, they technically broke up. They kind of got back together, put out an album, DIY, and then they didn't do anything for a number of years. So when they did this last album, I think 2017, they did a Kickstarter. So I was excited. I did the vinyl bundle. It was like $150, and they had 3 versions of the vinyl that were going to get printed. And with the bundle that I paid for, backed for, I got all 3 of them. I was super excited to do it. I think it's a great album. The reality, though, is that whoever they did the vinyl with was not particularly skilled. All 3 of my vinyl copies do not play correctly. They're all damaged in some way. One to the point where, like, it's not even worth putting on. It will not work. So I was like, well, I don't want that to happen again here. I have bought vinyl from them because they put out 7 inches since, and it seems like they've figured that out and the stuff's a lot better. But I'm like, if I'm paying for this once in a lifetime, theoretically, box set, I'm sure they'll sell them individually after. I need to make sure that I don't get shipping damage and I'm pissed, or that I get some that work and some that don't. So then I finally convinced my wife to let me get 2. And then she's like, are you going to sell the second one if the other one's fine? And I just looked at her and said, no, I will not. So I've got 2 copies of this limited edition, full discography vinyl collection of one of my favorite bands and several of my favorite albums. Doesn't ship until June. Sold out within an hour. I'm really excited. Really, really excited.
That's pretty awesome. But what happens when they have their next album? Then it's like, oh, you don't have the full thing anymore.
Sure. Yes, that's true. But I think, like, the sweet spot for them was like albums 2 through 5 or 6. So I think, like, I'm getting the backlog of the stuff that is the most nostalgic to me. Like, all I really care about is that I have Teenage Politics, Life in General, and Slowly Going the Way of the Buffalo on vinyl. I can die happy knowing that. And the other part is like, I own the other half already on vinyl, like the stuff that wasn't, like, out of print. And I have all the CDs too, but yeah, I don't know. It's still cool. It was a heavy investment, but I'm excited.
That's a lot of, how heavy was it? Or you don't have it yet.
The weight?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. It's gotta be 14 records plus a box set plus a book plus a slip mat. So a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Shipping was only $20. So I was excited about that. Oh. I heard international people had to pay $150.
Oof. Yeah.
comes out in June sometime, supposedly, without delays. So I will be proudly listening to a ton of MXPX on vinyl. Slowly Going the Way of the Buffalo is like one of the greatest punk rock albums that should have been so much bigger.
I will agree with you on that.
I think it's just the weird, I think it's the weird stigma in the scene of them being attached to a Christian label with Tooth and Nail and them coming off of that. Cause like Slowly Going the Way of the Buffalo was still partnered with, I think, A&M and Slowly Going the Way. And I think like that was part of the reason like why it didn't. And I heard that like the label they were working with on the A&M side was like going under, or that division was going under at the same time that that record was going out. So it was like their last, it was the last record that the people working on that were going to promote under that banner, and it fell. But like that is every bit as epic. It's better. It's better than Enema of the State. It's like it's a bigger landmark album. And I think when you listen to a lot of bands that came after that, a lot of them cite MXPX, particularly that record, as an influence, but it's good. I like him a lot. I like a lot.
That's pretty cool, though, that they, you know, are able to pull that together, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, I knew that they, so after they broke from Tooth and Nail, because of that contract deal, Tooth and Nail had exclusive rights to all of the original masters with everything they did there, which was the first 3.5 records. And then that was the thing, was like when Tooth and Nail was going under, after MXPX had already made it big, they went back to Tooth and Nail and did Secret Weapon. And that whole deal, I found out after that came out, because I always thought that was weird because I'd kind of fallen off of them at that point. But that entire deal with them going back and doing one last record was for all of the rights to their entire back catalog. So it was like probably the smartest deal they ever made. And then all they really had to contend with was like their major label stuff, which was, you know, three other records. And yeah, I mean, it's cool that they were able to get that too. I mean, I'm sure it was a ton of work on the back end. Yeah, I don't know. It made me really happy. Like I texted to Nate too when I got it, and I'm sure he thought I was crazy, but I was just like, it's so much of like my childhood and who I was, like in this neat little box. And
it is cool. It is very cool.
Yeah.
And I do like MXPX, probably not as much as you do. Actually, guarantee not as much as you do. I like a couple of their albums.
Yeah.
There was a part of me that was like, you're a little crazy. But yeah,
I'm like a third of the way to a concert in my living room by Mike Herrera with this purchase. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Because I think his price,
when
is,
I heard limited to 1500, I'm like, that seems high.
But, yeah, it was, really? No, their stuff sells out fast.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. No, these were gone, and they were
because Ryan buys them all.
I do, but yeah, they were $350 per set. So I mean, wow, figure they had 1500 of those people who are willing to plunk that down within an hour. Some of them in duplicate, like me. Yeah, that'll be great.
But on a per record basis,
yeah, it's a totally reasonable price when you figure out. If you just average 25 per record, which is about what a new vinyl pressing would cost. So you had 10 albums, two of them had double disc or four of them had double discs. The cost is there.
You just don't go to Orange Records downtown and throw that down and walk away with like 20, a whole bunch of records. So
yeah, if you spend $50 in a record shop. Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Really the only like bummer album in there is, I mean, there's a couple not great ones, but I think their first one's probably just the worst because it's just the roughest. But yeah. MXPX.
Mix picks.
I was listening to Mike Herrera's podcast this week, and like his guest was, is it Anthony Green or Andrew Green? The guy from like, he's from a bunch of bands, but he was in Seuss, and he's like, yeah, me and my buddy always wanted to start a MXPX covered band, but call it CXBX. And Mike's is like, what does CXBX stand for? He's like, dude, cover band. He's like, oh, okay, I'm an idiot. It's pretty funny. That's a good cover band name. Yeah. Any last stories, topics? Did I derail us too much with my dumb MXPX obsession?
No.
Awkward silence.
Maybe we're meditating.
Maybe. Maybe it's time to call it.
I guess. We can do that. Hey, friends. If you'd like to make a cover band of the Week in Rental podcast and you have a name, send it to us. We'd love to read that email of the cover band name. Can you? No, it's not a cover band. It'd be what? Cover podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Cover podcast. You can send that to weekendrentalpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you're following us on all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, all of those good places, YouTube, and you can find all things Weekend Rental at weekendpodcast.com. Friends, be kind. Wicca, wicca. Rewind.
Nice touch.
Wild Tracks is a badass name.
Stone Race FX is a better game.
Son, stop scoping out Laura Croft's rear.